A look at the local high school sports scene, from coaches and athletes to a preview of this week's games.
It's the Rudin Report on WICC.
Now, your host, Dave Rudin.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Rudin Report Live. We've got the final week of the regular season for FCAC basketball, and as predicted, it is wide open. We have four teams in, two teams very, very likely in, and then we've got a logjam of teams trying for the final two spots, and three of them are under 500. As we predicted, it's probably going to come down to the final night of the regular season on Wednesday, with as many as four games could be of consequence. And then Saturday we have the FCAC tournament, and we'll do a little bit of a preview on that coming up, since we won't have a show before the quarterfinals. Also coming up, and looking forward to this spot, Wilton coach Joel Garriak will be joining us for a couple of reasons. Number one, his team is part of that logjam this week, went 1-1, and he's one of the three teams sitting at 6-7 that will need at least one and possibly two wins this week. And then something that we get, I talk to the coaches a lot about off the record, away from things, and Joel and I were talking about this a little bit on Friday night before the Ludlow game, but kind of the state of FCAC basketball and just sort of the trajectory it's been on. It's kind of been on a little bit of a downswing for a variety of reasons. The biggest one maybe being that a lot of good players are transferring out of the league, and in many cases, I think, are chasing fool's gold. But we'll talk about that as well. But first, I'm going to talk to my co-host, Mike Walsh. Mike, how you doing?
Great, Dave. As you have said, this is going to be an exciting last week of the regular season, especially for that number 7 and number 8 spot. But, you know, one thing that's really impressive is the parity within the league. I was shocked that Darien, a team with one win, went up to Richfield, and went back and forth with Richfield, and really it came down to the last minute when Darien couldn't make the shots, and Richfield, as usual, did make the shots. That's the number one team against a team with one win on the season. It really has been kind of a different kind of season in the FCAC, but an exciting kind of season as far as parity. And, you know, that's why being the 7 or 8 seed is something to shoot for, because you don't know what's going to go happen if you play Richfield or even Staples, whoever the 1 and 2 seeds are. But, again, I enjoyed watching the games this year so far. Can't wait for the last week and then the postseason.
Yeah, I got a chance to see what it was like to be Mike Walsh on Thursday night. I was supposed to go cover the New Canaan Trumbull game, and I wasn't feeling well and kind of got worse as the day went on. At about 5 o'clock, decided I better stay home and send someone else there. And I've never really done this before. I usually, if I watch a game, it's on the computer, but I put YouTube on my TV set, and I was watching the Trumbull-New Canaan game, and then I had Fairfield Ward and Brian McMahon on my phone. So I got a chance to see what it was like to be Mike Walsh for a day, though. I have to admit, I do prefer being at the games.
Yeah, being there live, there's nothing like it, and that's the atmosphere, the student atmosphere, and you know, the crowds and the back and forth. You don't get that when you're watching it. But the thing I do get is a chance to watch, you know, maybe 5 or sometimes 6 games on a night. I mean, in and out of them, and you know, you can stop one and then go back to it, and you get a chance to see everything and what's going on, and what the coaching strategies are, and I understand the Canaan Trumbull game. We had another coaching strategy with Danny Melzer going to a 1-1, and I thought your article kind of brought it out. and that the player said, "Coach, I've been playing basketball my entire life, but I never heard of a diamond in one. What is that?" And Danny explained it pretty well, and his team performed it pretty well. And Sean Wilson, who's, in my opinion, one of the best players in the league, if not the best player in the league, was held to 16 points. And I'll tell you, I got to give him credit. He didn't force anything. He made some really terrific passes to some of his other players, but sometimes they converted and a lot of times they didn't convert. But, you know, anyway, so that talks about I get to see all that, and I'm able to maybe add a little bit to the to you and to the program.
You add a lot to the program, but and that comes real briefly before we get back on track. That came after Sean Wilson going off and scoring 37 against Ridgefield on Monday night. That might have a little something about doing the box and or the diamond and one. And that was the best performance. You had him, and then you had Peter Schapowski at Ridgefield scoring 33 in the middle. It was like a game at one-on-one on opposite ends of the court, one doing it outside, one doing it inside. But, you know, Wilson, Sean could be leading the league in assists, too. If they could find, as we'll get to the other team, one player to hit an outside, you know, who could hit an outside shot because he gives the ball up. You know, he's an unselfish player, too. But I did a little bit of a straw poll. It'll be interesting. Talk to a few coaches about who they're going to vote for player of the year. And it's going to be a little bit of a split vote. I know there's some sentiment for Sean Wilson. There's a little bit of sentiment, too, for Ryan Torello at Ludlow. And it seems to be the feeling is that Sam Klacko, you know, certainly would be in the mix, but because of his injury and having to miss these games, that may end up hurting him. But we'll see what happens with that. But a more consequence, let's just kind of lay out what we do know. Unless Ridgefield loses twice and Staples wins twice, including over Ridgefield last day of the season on Wednesday, Ridgefield's going to be the one. Staples is going to be the two. Ward and Ludlow are tied right now with three losses for the three and the four. Ward's got the tiebreaker because they beat Ludlow. New Canaan and Greenwich are right now sitting at 5-6 at 8-5. I think eight wins gets you in, but it's not a definite yet. New Canaan's got the tiebreaker over Greenwich. And here's where we get a little interesting, and we could talk about for a couple of minutes before we take a break. But you got Stanford right now in the seventh spot at 7-6, and then sitting in the eighth spot tied is McMahon Trumbull at Wilton, all at 6-7. That kind of shows you, Mike, where how everything changes. We're off Trumbull, then we're on Trumbull. And now, you know, McMahon and Trumbull were the two teams who were kind of talking up last week. And then both teams lost games and are back in the pack at 6-7. We talked about this on the car ride, my car ride over here. You know, Stanford, just because they have that extra win right now, is in the more enviable position. But I have no idea what's going to happen this week. There's no game. None of the outcomes with these teams is really going to shock me.
No, I agree with that. And I think that the Wilton game versus Stanford is very obviously very important. I think if Wilton can somehow upset Stanford, they could be.
That's not an upset. That's not any of these teams beating the other. No, I mean, Stanford's only one game ahead of them in the league. That's not an up. I mean, you really think any of these teams beat each other? Any of them's an upset?
No, that's true, because I watched the Stanford team play Norwalk, and I got to give Norwalk a lot of credit. They have one win on the season, but they go out and they play hard, and, you know, it was a 37-37 game, and Sutton got fouled with 2 seconds left and missed both free throws, but took a bad bounce and went into the hands of a Stanford player who laid it in, and Stanford won 39-37 over Norwalk. So you're right, anybody, and that was at Stanford High. anybody can beat anybody. So,
and that came 3 days after Stanford beat Ward, which may end up being the most consequential outcome of this whole race. A game that we thought Ward had won with 2 seconds to go. I'll let you describe it quickly before we go to a break, because you were watching it and telling me, but you end up having Ryan Connors at the second overtime, as he was tripping, put the ball up, and somehow it went in. It made SportsCenter's number 10 play of the day, but that gave them a double overtime win.
No, I don't think that was intended to be the shot, first of all. And then I'm sure that Ryan just kind of threw it up at the end, hoping that it went in, and it did go in. And Stanford had two wins with 2 seconds left on the clock this week to put them back in contention. So sometimes, as we talk about Ridgefield, Stanford got lucky the last two games. And maybe that's a sign. Who knows? But, Wilton, I thought, had a tough loss. You saw that game.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. So why don't we take a break here? And we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the slog jam and maybe just a quick look ahead to the FCAC tournament. You're listening to the Rude Report Live on WICC.
Teams, athletes, coaches, and everything that makes local high school sports great. Now, back to the Rude Report on WICC with Dave Rude.
All right, we're going to bounce around with this middle of the pack group just for a couple more minutes, and then look a little bit at the tournament before we are joined by Wilton coach Joel Gariak. Mike, you're starting to talk a little bit about Wilton, and I covered both their games this week. And actually, in a year where there haven't been a lot of really, really great games, there were certainly two of the most entertaining games this week. They, on Tuesday night, lost a game to Brian McMahon, they beat Brian McMahon in a game that they lost by 19 points. They were leading by 19 points, I'm sorry. And Brian McMahon made a furious run at them, tied the game, and then Wilton was able to settle themselves down after Jermell Bynum made a shot at the buzzer to force overtime and get the win. And then they played a game on Friday night where it was a real even game with Ludlow. Again, real entertaining, fast-paced, some pressing going on. And Wilton missed a shot at the buzzer. Joel was trying to call a timeout. The refs didn't see it. And so they go 1-1, and they're now grouped up in this pack. They were the team that's made the biggest run to get to this spot. And we're looking at this 4-team bunch right now.
No, I agree. And I watched the end of that Wilton game, and I was kind of surprised because you had two veteran officials on the game. And, with 11 seconds, they grabbed the rebound and were coming down the court. And I could see Joel on the live stream yelling for a timeout. Now, if I'm an official, especially two good officials like that, I'm surprised that they didn't look to see that. And he was calling timeout and grant him that timeout. And as it turned out, Lucetta had taken a tough shot, and unfortunately didn't go in for Joel. But it was a good win for Ludlow on their home court, especially without Mahoney. The other couple other kids stepped up. So exciting basketball. There's no question about that. But, trying to figure out who's going to beat who, you're absolutely right. It's on any given night, anybody seems to be able to beat anybody.
Yep, it's going to be wide open. The Stanford-Wilton games tomorrow is huge, and one of the few games where you have two teams, if not the only one, where they're both teams are trying to get in. And then you got Wilton finishing up with Fairfield Ward. Stanford needs one more win to get in, and they've got St. Joseph on the final night. That they'll be a heavy favorite, but you never know when TJ Wright's gonna go off on you. And Stanford Trumbull's got to finish up. I'll be with Trumbull tomorrow. against Fairfield Ludlow, and then they're home against West Hill. West Hill, actually, you know, they could get into that whole 7 and 8 bunch, but they would need everybody else above them to lose out, and I don't think that's gonna happen. I mean, we might have a team get in with 7 wins.
Well, that's a possibility, but you know, that would be an ironic thing for the whole season. The team get in with 7 wins and play Richfield in the first game, and have it come down to the buzzer, and Richfield usually wins that. But this year, you don't know. I do think, as you said, that the Wilton and Stanford game is really big, especially for Wilton, obviously. And then if they go to Ward and they play Ward, you know, who knows? Maybe they can beat them.
A win by Stanford's going to get tomorrow's going to get Stanford in.
They'll get Stanford in, correct? That's the way I think, because even if they should be upset by St. Joe's, although again, upset is not a word we use in this league this year. You know, they still would be in. And I think that Trumbull has a tough task playing Ludlow and then having to play West Hill to finish it up because you don't know what.
And I didn't, and we're not even taking into account, and I should have sat down and really worked on this yesterday, but it's going to change so much. And we got tiebreakers to figure out, but I'm going to save that for after Monday's games. Let's, I don't know how long we got. Wilton coach Joe Garriak coming up, and we could be on for a while with Joe. I don't know. So kind of tough to look ahead to the FCAC tournament just because when we don't even know who's playing each other yet. We won't know until Wednesday night. We'll have Saturday's quarterfinals, which I'm sure will dominate our talk next Sunday. But, you know, I just as a quick overview and looking who as who we know is going to get in. I have as much as up, you know, upsets are possible. We don't know. Sam Klacko is out with a wrist injury. We know he's going to play because I think he'd be playing right now if this was the playoffs. But obviously, a healthy Sam Klacko changes the an unhealthy Sam Klacko really changes the dynamic of everything. But assuming he's healthy right now, I look at it. It's hard for me to see a non-Ridgefield Staples final other than I'll allow for. I could see Fairfield Ward possibly winning a semifinal game.
Well, Ward, as I say, and whoever they play will have the advantage of being on their home court for the quarterfinals, which I think is a big advantage. And they do have the kid in Kramer inside, who I really like. A left-hander can score and pass it out. And defend, along with Shea and Connors. They have some kick guards that can shoot it. I think if they can play defense like they're capable of playing defense, which they do at times, you know, they have a chance. As you say, though, Staples
is a tough matchup for Ward. That's the one thing. We saw it happen the first game. I think that's one reason. I like Ward's three offensive players a lot. I love Kramer a lot. A lot of people, whenever I talk player of the year, Kramer's going to be a first team all FCAC player for certain. And he's on the periphery of the discussion. I just think Staples is a tough matchup for Ward.
No, I don't disagree with you. And I think that, Richfield has shown, you know, who's really come on is Peter Staszkowski. I mean, he is, even in the last game, when it was close against Darien, he made a lot of big baskets inside. He's gaining a lot of confidence. And everybody talks about Alex Hickey, and rightly so. He's a very good player. But Staszkowski is the key to that team. If you can stop him inside, you know, you have a chance to beat Richfield.
He's a matchup. He's a matchup problem because a lot of people don't have the presence in the middle like he does, and we saw what he did against Trumbull. So I agree. Spakowski's.
I think Staples might have that person in matching up in Tobias with him, but that would be a great matchup. But I think it's going to be tough to get there. I think I told you this before. The team that's I know
who your sleeper is. I know who you're going to talk about.
Well,
going to get a little red here, right?
I think that Greenwich is real. They've won 7 out of the last 10. They went up to Richfield, and except for a travel call at the end of the game, would have beat Richfield. They're really coming on, and they have a big. They have Maloney, who I think is a first-team FCAC player. And lately, they've been getting some scoring out of I forget his
Sandro
name.
Sandro Scott.
Sandro, right. A kid named Martin. So, I mean, they're capable of an upset in that first quarter final round. And if I had to pick a sleeper, that's who I pick as an upset in the first round.
Yeah, and I don't even consider that. If they played Ludlow or Ward, it's not a seismic upset. It's an upset. You know who I'm going to put as my sleeper. I'm picking whoever plays Ridgefield. And that's not it. That's only because Ridgefield's played to the competition all year. They've dodged all these bullets. So you're going to say, you know, whoever this eighth seed is, they're going to be a heavy favorite over the eighth seed. And it's incredible. Credit to Ridgefield how they've dodged every single bullet and they've come down. How many games now against teams that they were, teams that are down in, I'm looking down here, teams that are like seeded 6 or further down, or teams like you said, Darien on Friday night. You're texting me. You know, I'm trying to interview John Daly and giving him upsets as you're texting me where things stand. But I'm only picking. You know what? It would be cruel if Ridgefield played one of these games and they ended up losing it and it came in the playoffs. But I'm picking that. You can't get more sleeperish than picking the eighth seed. So I'm picking whoever plays Ridgefield only because of the odds.
I don't know. I wouldn't call that a sleeper. I mean, it's almost like rising from the dead. But, I think it's awful tough to beat Ridgefield. I don't care who the eighth seed is. They're geared up for this. This is their time of year. And Staples has been able to upset them the last 2 years. And I know that Andrew and the guys are really ready to explode, and they're going to do. I'm not going to pick them to win yet. We'll make that prediction on next Sunday's show, but they will be part of the mix on next Sunday, and your sleeper will be have slept away, been swept away.
Probably will be, but I just thought that'd kind of be a fun pick, and it's funny. We've gone through half the show. And we haven't even talked about Ridgefield playing Staples on Wednesday night, and just kind of shows how the dynamic has changed now that that game's not for the number one seed and regular season title, or very unlikely to be. It's not definite yet, but it's gonna allow me. I love and I do this in every single sport. I love being home the last day of the regular season. And just monitoring everything, and there's going to be so much to monitor, and I'll be able to watch the stream of Ridgefield Staples and kind of keep track on all these other games. So that'll allow me to be able to do that. And if we're going to cover anything, it's really, and I don't even know, it could be 3 or 4 different games. I don't know what we cover, but we got in most of everything I wanted to, and we'll see if we have a little time at the end of the show. But after the break, our next guest is going to be someone that I think we'll have a lot to talk about. Wilton coach Joel Garriak. He's on the other side. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
He knows everything you need to know about local high school sports. Back to the Rudin Report with Dave Rudin on WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back. We've been talking about this pack of teams that are battling for the final two spots. And joining us right now, a former FCAC player, and we're going to talk a little bit about the state of FCAC basketball, but let's talk about him first with what's going on this week, and that's Wilton coach Joel Garriak. Joel, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming. Kind of a crazy week. I got to spend the week with you, and it wasn't for the faint of heart. You know, Tuesday, you have a 19-point lead. McMahon makes a furious comeback, scores at the end of regulation time to send you into overtime, and then your two guys really, Lucetta and Roy, really stepped up and got you a win. And then Friday night, I'm with you in a game that could have gone either way, right down to the end. It was another entertaining game, and you miss a shot at the buzzer, a little bit of a controversial ending. What's your state right now? You guys were really struggled and looked like you were on the verge of getting knocked out, and then won three in a row to get yourself back into it.
Yeah, I mean, we lost 7 of 8 before the three-game winning streak. We lost our point guard, Matty Weiss, this year, and that really changed the trajectory of our team. It took me a while and the kids a while to figure out what our identity would be. I'm sure you've seen we've won more zones. But it's but we're definitely getting better as the game goes on. As of the last two games, McMahon game, 19-point lead, and Trebell just started going off in threes from everywhere. Cut the lead down to overtime, and then literally went to overtime. We my two better players took over and got a couple of big plays to help us win. And then two nights ago, playing against Ludlow. Great game, back and forth the entire time. We were up by a couple. They were up by a couple. Obviously, wanted timeout towards the end of the game, but didn't get that. But that being said, I mean, Ludlow played a great game, and it was a fun atmosphere to be part of.
Yeah, I got to see you right in the
Let me interrupt
right in the
you just 1 minute to say I hope you – I tell you, you kept your team together, and they battled back, and you got the wins and then went into Ludlow. And I agree with you. I was really surprised that I saw you on the live stream calling timeout, and neither official recognized that. And they're both good officials. I was kind of surprised that they didn't see that. And then obviously the ending didn't come as you wanted. But my question
was...
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, my question would be... what was their explanation for not recognizing the timeout? These are two very good officials, by the way.
Yeah.
All I got back was they didn't see me or hear me. So that's all I can say. I'm not very quiet in the game, so.
Yeah.
Things happen, you know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've been there, and it gets frustrating, but now you have to get your guys up for a big game against Stanford. And nobody scouts better than you do, Joe. I get a chance to see a lot of these games and live stream. You go out and you actually see them in person whenever you can, and I'm sure you watch the live streams. How do you handle Stanford? I mean, they got size and athleticism and you know, yet Norwalk holds them to a 39-37 game. That's part of what I don't understand in the league this year, the way the games are going.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you see, on any given night, anybody can beat anybody. It's just the way the league is this year. We've seen crazy games this year. You know, saw Richfield won a couple games at the buzzer. You saw Stanford High won two games at the buzzer in the past week. Preparing for Stanford High is hard. I mean, they have athletes, they have kids that can shoot it, they actually have size, they have 6'10" kid, and they do a very good job as far as, you know, what they want to get inside. Nobody gives the kid Taylor enough credit because he does a hell of a job inside as well. But it's going to be a tough game. You know, we'll look forward to it, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, that game's going to really be – of all the games, that's the one game where you have two teams battling to get in, going head-to-head against each other. And how do you go against when they use him? I don't think they use him anywhere near enough. But, yeah, 6'10" is hard to defend. And like you said before, you're playing a lot more 3-2 than we're accustomed to seeing. And actually, it's been very effective for you. You guys play it well.
Yeah, I mean, luckily for the 6'10" kid, I have a 6'6" kid who's going to have his hands full, but at least I have a little bit of size to kind of match up with it. But again, he's 6'10". As far as the zones going, you know, I had to find something that works for us to get out in transition and get, you know, pass the ball up the floor, play a good defense that can keep teams from penetrating on us. And that's what we came up with.
And then, looking ahead, a win doesn't necessarily get you in. A loss doesn't necessarily knock you out, but then you got to finish the season with a visit from a very good Fairfield Ward team.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's going to be easy. We told the kids since the St. Joe's game that we're basically every game is a playoff game. We told them we could have one falter, and that falter right now was Ludlow by a point. We beat the other three teams we had to beat to give us a shot, and now we have to go into the last two and hope we win those games because I think you need two to get in. One, I think, will just keep us out.
Do you see – And this is kind of jumping the gun a little bit, but it kind of helps with whoever gets in. And you don't need to name who it is, but looking at the teams up top that you could possibly play in the tournament, is there anybody that you really, really feel you need to avoid? And is there anybody that you kind of hope you would get if you had to play them out of that group?
If you asked me earlier in the season, I would have said, yeah, try to avoid Staples, obviously. But honestly, the way teams are playing against each other now, Klacko, we'll see how he does with his wrist. I'm not sure how 100% he is. But in general, everybody's been playing tough against them. I mean, Mike will be happy against Staples. We try to triangle it too against them for a little while as well. But it's been one of those things that I think anybody can beat anybody in a given night. But and playing at Fairfield Ward is a hard gym to play, and that's why scores are always low there too.
Okay, why don't we take a break and then – I want to kind of segue into the state of basketball, and you're a former player. Mike's a former coach. We all go way, way back. So I just want to talk a little bit about what's been going on and what's to come. So we'll do that on the other side. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Fall high school sports lives right here on WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut. Now, back to the Rudin Report and your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and Joel is kind enough to stay on for one more spot here. And Joel, you and I talked about it. Mike, we've talked about it a lot, and that's kind of the state of basketball right now. And it's been a little bit on a downward trajectory. Certainly, we see it. Offenses struggle. There aren't that many top scorers as there used to be. To a certain extent, we're comparing apples to oranges. But the number one thing is attributed to is a lot of top players going to private schools. Joel, do you see it that way? Is that the biggest reason?
I agree. I mean, especially in the inner city schools. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've lost a couple of kids to prep over the years, and I'm sure those teams have lost a couple of kids here and there too as well. But the inner city schools are getting plucked more and more, and it's definitely a problem. And I think a lot of the problem is too is a lot of kids that are in inner city schools don't have the want to play for the high school and represent their town or their high school as much as they did when I kind of grew up in, you know, the 80s, 90s. It was a little bit different, and the prep schools weren't coming in as much.
Yeah, and it's Norwalk gets poached more, I think, more, and they do in football too than any school, and that's really hurt them. But Mike and Joel, you can both, and then I'll interject a little bit. But Do these kids really that often gain that much? Do they end up going to a better college or getting into college if they do go prep?
Well, let me answer that first. I think it all depends on the student athlete. I had a kid by the name of Brandon Wheeler, who as a sophomore was young, 15-year-old sophomore, and they had an opportunity to go to prep school up at St. Andrews in Rhode Island. They offered to pay for everything for him and repeat his sophomore year, and he was young. And Wheeler did that and actually ended up transferring from there his senior year to the PSA Cardinals and ended up at Purdue, you know, with a full ride, and then finished his college career at St. John's. So in his case, I felt it benefited him, and I told him that when he decided to leave, and his father. And the other flip side, and I think this is where kids miss out, you lose your college or high school experience. All the friends that you've had since you've been in sometimes junior high into high school, and Cedric Kazmir, to me, is the epitome of that. Cedric played all 4 years for us at Trinity, went on and played at South Kent with Tremont Waters and a really good team, and ended up, this is after his senior year, enjoyed his senior year with Trinity, won a couple state titles, and then he went on and, you know, Cedric got a full ride to Iona College, where he was a MAC Rookie of the Year, and they had a very successful career, and he was injured. And still continued on playing and finished up at Florida. So I've seen both Florida Gulf Coast. So I've seen both the kids who benefit. And I really think if you're a I think there's a kid now. I just read an article up in Waterbury who Elijah Parker, who's going to be scored over 2,000 points. He was at Holy Cross, left Holy Cross, and transferred to a prep school, St. Thomas More. And then after his junior year at St. Thomas More, decided, hey, I want to be back with my friends at Holy Cross, and transferred back to Holy Cross. So, I mean, it depends on the kid, but it also depends on whether or not the situation. There are opportunities out there, but I've seen so many kids who decide to leave and go somewhere else and maybe visions of Division One. A lot of it's fostered, by the way, by the AAU coaches. I think a lot of AAU coaches, you know, see somebody that they can send to a prep school, and then it's a feather in their cap, etc. You know, and as I say, for some it's good, for some it's not. But I don't understand why you just don't enjoy your time as a senior in high school, and then if you want, decide that to go to prep school. Now, as far as some of the prep schools taking kids out of, like, Norwalk High School, et cetera, I think that has a lot to do with education. Norwalk, as you said, has been hit probably harder than anybody. I mean, if you put A.J. Trimboli and his brother Ryan and a couple of the kids that are Notre Dame and Fairfield, at Norwalk High School, they would be a different team. But, you know, the same thing could be said if Trinity were still in existence. You know, we had kids that were from Stanford and Stanford High and Norwalk and West Hill. And, you know, we got a lot out of Westchester, too, for that matter. But, you know, it's a situation is what's best for the kid. And some of these kids read it correctly, and some of them don't.
Joel, what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I mean, the only thing I have a problem with is when the kids are chasing after stuff, and they're still going to go to Division III. One of my latest ones is Tom McKiernan. He played 4 years for me, enjoyed it, had a great career, played against Elijah up in the Holy Cross in one of our playoff games, and then decided he needed another year of school, went to prep school, and now he's playing basketball. I think that's a good route to do it, too. Obviously, if you have situations as far as education, you want to make sure the kid's in the right spot. You have to do that as a family, I said. But I think, in general, there's just a lack of wanting to be with you know, your friends, your kids, your classmates, your girl you've been playing with since you were probably 5, 6, 7 years old. And that's kind of that continuity has kind of gone away, and then the coaches are kind of scrambling trying to figure out what we can do.
Yeah, my view as a sports writer, a little different view. I think almost all of these kids are chasing fool's gold. I think 90% of them, if not higher, end up going to the same level school as they would have if they stayed in high school. My view also is you really don't even need to consider it until you're a senior, after you've graduated from high school. Play with all your friends growing up. The FCAC could be a high caliber league if a lot of these kids would stick around. They go to places where nobody sees them play. They get no publicity. It's kind of toil in anonymity. And again, they're going to end up going to the same place. And I looked up, I won't name who the player is, but somebody would be a dominant, not the best player in the league. And a couple of years ago, decided to go prep. Nobody could really figure out why. And I looked up yesterday and going to play at a MAC school. And a MAC school is a great quality of basketball. If you play in the MAC, you're a good player. But I think if that kid stayed in the FCAC, he still would have gone to a MAC school. Yeah, the thing that's frustrating, and this is where we go apples and oranges again, and I talked with each of you a little bit about this, but it's frustrating for me more as a sports writer than it probably is for you guys as coaches. But, you know, going back to, and you both were involved in this, I go back to the year where, you know, Bassick was an eighth seed and ended up winning the championship, and that eight seed would have been a one seed today. And it's just changed. And maybe that's just a sports writer in me, where I'm a basketball guy. And it's just a little bit frustrating for me, where I love watching basketball. And it's just, as someone covering it and writing about it, it's not as much fun for me as it used to be, where I think it's a little bit different for coaches, where you guys, whoever you get, you come in, you coach them, and you go to battle with them.
That's true. But, I mean, I remember that year, 95, Mike was the one seed. My West Coast team was the two seed that year. Mike's team was undefeated going into the last game of the year. We played them. They happened to knock them off, luckily for us, to help us get the two seed. And then Bassick got in there and ran through them and got the championship and lost to Nakai, who beat us in the semis. So, I mean, and every team, I mean, he had Rosh. He had Earl. He had, you know, Spillane. We had Jamar Dunmore. They had Bobby Jones. They had Lawson. I mean, the whole team, even Archie had Sellers and Neisler. There was a bunch of Division I players in the entire league. And that's the part, as from your point of view, I see being tough. You're seeing the quality of basketball when it comes to individual players like that you don't see as much anymore. You get one or two in the league. If you're lucky, you're one or two in the state. And that's been the big drop-off.
Well, there's a drop-off as far as the Rochmel Jones and people like that. I mean, right now, I'm having watched the league. I don't think there's a Division I player in the entire league. Potentially, the big kid from Stanford, if he gets better and gets good coaching, maybe a Division I player. Do you see any Division I players, Joel?
No, I see a bunch of very good basketball players. There could be a kid that sneaks into a Yale or a very, very low Division I if they get the right opportunity that fits their game. But I think right now the reason we have parity, I think, is because we have a lot of really, really good coaches that coach the teams, the kids in front of them, put the right people in the right spots, and that's why we have the games we have. We're talking today, you got to give Richfield credit for all the things they've had. They're still undefeated in the league and they're doing their job. So there's things that, as a coach, we have to adapt to what we have.
I don't mean to say that from the coach's standpoint. I really think that the coaches in the SEAC are certainly as good as the coaches were when I was coaching, and they do a great job. And as parity in the league and the excitement in the league, to me, is terrific.
And, well, that's been the big thing. That's is the parity in the league. But we're just about out of time here. Joel, thanks a lot for joining us, and best of luck this week. Hopefully, you guys can pull off a couple of wins and get in.
Yeah, thank you. We'll need it.
Thanks a lot. Mike, we'll do this again next week, and we'll have some quarterfinal games to talk about.
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys. Good conversation. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Paul in the booth there. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next Sunday.